Hello and welcome back to the Research VR podcast, everybody. That's a podcast dedicated to talking about the science behind virtual reality, the podcast that you can actually sit in and record without having to wear pants, because we do this in VR. Hello to the show, everyone.
Yay.
I am your host, Oswald Abanian. My co-host, Peter, is here. And with me are two special guests. We have Amy, aka Ms. Habit from Servius, who's the product marketing manager of the Sprint Factor game and the lead designer from Servius, Andrew Abate. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, welcome to our little
world. To the podcast.
It's awesome to be doing this.
Yes,
it's really weird, too.
I think it is. Every show in Research VR, at least ever since we started doing this in big screen, it starts with the guests a little bit confused. I'm like, I don't, we've never done this before. So anyway, don't worry about it. It'll be a little bit weird. It'll get less weird as time goes on. We are going to talk about a couple pieces of news today. We just got back from a Thanksgiving break. We haven't done an episode in like a few weeks, Peter, right?
It's been a few weeks. Peter was kind of traveling around. I was in Amsterdam on the VR days, and I met you in Berlin. Right. I was on the VRST where I published the paper. Then I was on the VR Now, and there were more events. I was on the
The Thanksgiving hiatus.
Let's call it Thanksgiving hiatus. And we are definitely back, we will definitely be more on time, and someone of us, me, got his time together, and we'll edit it quicker and push it out.
That's right. We will do some housekeeping later after the full episode. Yeah. Maybe a little bit about
what are you doing? What we're up to.
See, people are getting distracted.
Yeah,
I love it, guys. All right, we're gonna get the ship back on its route towards the awesome destination that nobody knows where it's going. So let's talk a little bit about the news. There's been a lot that's happened in the past like couple of weeks, and I have a couple of highlights that I want to go over. Starting with today, this bombshell dropped where Google announced its plans that what they want to do with Poly. So Poly is the combination of Tilt Brush and Blocks, where it's basically the Adobe or the Autodesk suite of VR right now. Like it's where you do all 3D work, you know, artistic and architectural, whatnot. They just announced their new Poly API, which is a Unity and Unreal plugin, and it's literally seamless because like you can pull in objects either in runtime or, you know, in editor mode. And it's basically you can design something in Blocks and then like click save and upload and it immediately have access to it in either like Unity editor or in a few other games as well. That's the really fun part is like guys over at, what was it called? From Visionary VR, they're working on Mindshow. And you can now, you know, design things in Blocks and bring it into that app, or you can bring those things into Mudbox. There's a few other apps as well that support it. It's really cool. I'm very excited for like apps now starting to talk to each other. And thoughts, guys? What does this mean?
It kind of fits in the current trends that a lot of companies. I'm pretty sure we'll talk about it too. Like Amazon acquired this company, creating content in your browser. Everyone is focused on making this creation of VR or connection between the apps more seamless. And I think it's a wonderful trend showing that we are entering a new, more adult state of VR.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, just around here, I know our artists are playing around with a bunch of sculpting tools in VR because it gives better control. I mean, there's no limitations. And honestly, for sculpting, it is such a 3D thing to begin with, that it makes a lot more sense in VR. Obviously, they've been telling me that it takes some, you know, getting used to going from like a 2D medium to full 3D. But yeah, I've definitely been seeing some little. Actually, I think I saw it from your feed on Facebook with like the cool little scrollable 3D thing. And it just seems like everything's get more and more integrated just the way going forward.
That was actually Facebook side of things. That was Medium integrating into the Facebook feed and kind of that being the only 3D viewer that you can have on both mobile and desktop, but I think they're going to open that up later for like all 3D things. But this is really cool. This is, I think, a big step forward. We're not going to dwell on it too long. Actually, I'm going to come sit by you guys so we don't look around the room and break our necks.
Hi.
Much better. Cool. So the second piece of news Vivex announced a bunch of new companies that they have in their batch three now. So that Vivex is an accelerator that HCC is running, and they, you know, fund early stage startups and figure out ways to integrate that technology into their pipelines and ecosystems. But they're not exclusive to HCC. And so one thing I wanted, there's a lot of companies in like the four different places that they have Vivex. But one I want to point out is actually Neurable. So Neurable is a EEG company where they are integrating basically EEGs, these brain sensors, into the HCC Vive and be able to kind of give you brain-computer interfaces. So I think we briefly mentioned them before, Peter. I don't know if we've really talked about it.
In a few episodes.
I think they're actually going to be on an upcoming show to talk a little bit about their tech, but I thought that was really neat that like we're now starting to see the next steps of these immersive techs, you know, because you know hands and controllers aren't the last thing you're going to interact with.
Regard science, I mean, a lot of scientists used already EEG systems, so electroencephalography, and the HTC Vive or the Oculus. I've just been to a meetup in the Charité in Berlin where it was a science VR meetup, and a lot of the scientists have actually tried to record a proper signal using EEG and the headsets. And one problem is that when you have the headset strapped on and you move your head too much, it basically rips the electrodes around your head, wow. Which creates huge artifacts. And if you could obviously integrate the system inside the headset itself, it would obviously, you know, produce a cleaner signal and also be more integrated and easier to apply. Kind of excited to hear about Neurable. Yeah, I was trying to read it, but my eyes are bad.
Do you guys have any interest in like using your brain to integrate that into your game design?
Doesn't seem like anytime soon, but it would be amazing to be able to do that. I think that sometimes the motor functions from your brain to what you're trying to do with your hands or with your head, because right now the VR technology is limited, right? So stories like this and startups like this are necessary to progress and to see what we can actually do in VR. I would be interested to see what my brain thinks that I want and to see it translate, right? Like it's like the subconscious and actually see it in a visual representation in VR would be kind of incredible and really scary.
I mean, that's kind of...
Well, don't worry, the technology is not as far as we can really read the thoughts. You can move cubes with your mind, like, okay, I want to push it forward and backwards and some other tricks, but we are not yet Matrix now.
So weren't they showing, they were showing this kind of stuff like years back too. It's not 100% new, I think. But yeah, obviously everything's kind of trending to that whole sci-fi, let's take a cord and like jack it into the back of our brain kind of thing. I think the interesting thing is like just coming from Sprint Vector and trying to teach people something that even though it is pretty intrinsic to how we actually do stuff, I just broke my monitor. Interesting to how we actually move in real life. It's like such a different thing to try and teach somebody to manipulate something with their mind. I mean, just saying it like that is weird, right? So to try and teach somebody that, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm very curious to know what like the first time user experience would be, right? And like the calibration that you'd kind of go through. I think that's something that they... we'll probably dive into it in another episode, but like they were really claiming to have like really short calibration times and then like it getting calibrated to that person for future uses as well. Same thing with like eye trackers. I think before Neurable or like any BCI becomes like a huge thing, eye tracking will do actually. Yes. Eye tracking can do like a lot of the things that, you know, what we want BCIs to do, because it's like there's such a short distance between what your intent is to what, you know, your actions are. You don't even have to think about it. Your eyes absolutely just look at things. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Good job on Neurable and all the other Vivex teams. Oh, Nanom, another one I just want to throw in there. Nanom is a company out of San Diego. There were students actually out of the UC San Diego University that...
Blockchain.
Well, before all that, they actually created like a VR organic chemistry app where you can, instead of using you know, blocks and models like you do in class, you can actually create them there. They also were one of the only ones that was creating a math kind of like 3D vector calculus
application where you can like really, you know, understand objects a lot better. I remember looking at pictures and books and not really making that transformation sometimes as easily. But so Nanum is also a part of the Vibex batch. Hopefully, maybe we'll have them on the show as well, Peter. That would be really interesting.
That would be awesome.
All right, moving on. We've got a bunch of things to get through, and I really want to talk about Sprint Vector. So let's, we're going through this. It's Neurable. What do we got? Oculus Go is now starting to ship. The developers, I don't know if this is something that you guys requested, but have you received it? Can you talk about it?
No comment?
No comment. All right.
She says no comment. Really? I say no comment.
Yeah, actually, the article on Road to VR says, or no, VR Scout says that they, VR Scout caught a developer who had sent photos that can't share any hardware specifications as such, but has taken a number of photos. We'll link these pictures and articles in the show notes. Apparently, Lightro reveals their Emerge 2.0, which is their huge light field array camera.
Yeah, so anyone listening in audio, what I'm right now looking at is a photo of a device that is as big as a human, kind of.
Bigger.
And looks really frightening, maybe even bigger.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of camera sensors. It looks frightening.
It does. It's we'll have to actually do a dive into this, because every couple of months we come back to the light field question, and we're like, what is it? We try to re-understand things again, try to make these terms a little bit more accessible for people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tough to understand because you hardly can imagine it, but the reason that they have so many cameras on this device is that they kind of try to recreate a light field, and a light field is nothing else and basically the information how rays go. So usually the sensor in a camera captures rather the photons going into from one particular space onto the sensor, but in a light field you can kind of look around. So you don't record a photo, but you record more a volumetric photo, and this is what light field is, and that's why you need so many cameras, and this is why this device looks so frightening.
It definitely doesn't look that nice little ball render that they showed like 2 years ago, if you remember. That it was looked like this super futuristic looking, like it literally didn't even have a lens on it. It was just like this metallic ball that was supposed to somehow capture the light all around it for you to walk in and sixth off. We'll definitely, I have honestly haven't done enough research on this new camera to talk about it, but I have tried their latest demo a few months ago. It was the Hallelujah experience. Pretty well done, actually. I enjoyed it, but we'll get back to these thoughts later on. I have my own thoughts on volumetric or light field video, and they're not as positive as one might expect.
And maybe someone from Lightro might join us for an episode. So whenever anyone is listening, contact us.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. We should do a debate, like volumetric video from like 8i versus Lightro, and just duke it out. And
need a platform to debate? Come to us.
That's right.
Amazon
announced a new development tool, a new engine basically, that lives in your browser. It's called Sumerian, and it's supposed to help web-based VR apps be developed quicker. So they pretty much support all the hardware, you know, Vive Rift, Daydream, Go, as far as they've announced. And this could be a serious contender for like a quick web VR, or like a competitor to React VR from Facebook. We've been hearing a lot about Amazon like making patents, making huge investments into VR and AR, but there's been nothing from them. And so this is like kind of a clear sign that they've got some hardware under wraps as well.
Well, the only news that was kind of going in the direction was that they acquired or licensed the CryEngine under the Lumberjack brand that was kind of already supporting VR.
That didn't go anywhere. Like I know not a single person that's ever used that. And
me neither.
So I think they realized that they can't compete against like the already established engines with like developers using them for VR, like just hard, you know, native app VRs, but web VR is still super open. You know, there isn't really huge standards yet. So that's smart of them to make a move in that regard. I think Amazon is like the sleeping giant that we haven't really considered in this industry, but they're just going to like drop this 20 megaton bomb in like a year or two and just be like, what? Like, suddenly own everything.
I think they prepare some things that you can see. For example, this very popular game that I always forget the name of has now Alexa integration. What was it? Something that kids play those days. So you can now say, kind of, Alexa, activate my strongest weapon. And they also want to ship kind of a loudspeaker that is formed like the crystal inside the game. So I think when we consider the success of Alexa and that, you know, VR and IR kind of will have more avatars to talk to, I'm pretty sure they are looking forward to be integrated in every of the applications out there.
I think they had a Destiny integration that they announced, like you could have Alexa sound like a guy in Destiny. Yes.
Just in general, it seems like Amazon has like a lot of really big plans. So like what they're trying to do essentially with the retail space, it just shows that it's a company with really big ideas and they're willing to play like the long game. So I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah.
Okay. Next news.
Next thing, I think I'm going to skip over to TPcast being on the Rift. Sounds exactly how it is. And so we'll leave it at that. This is something kind of special where I don't think it's gotten enough coverage. There's a guy.
You shared it?
Oh, awesome. There's a guy named Azad, actually, not to be confused with my name, Azad, which you can see why I go by Oz now. He's making a kind of a volumetric documentary called Azad and Azad. And it's about it's an augmented reality documentary that portrays the diversity of socio-political experiences of Muslims in the U.S. So it's a project on Kickstarter that finally just hit its $20,000 goal. They have a really cool concept video that they've created. Doesn't seem like a scammy Kickstarter. And I just want to kind of plug this in here because I haven't seen enough projects that are beyond 360, let's just say, and that is using the tech in a real impactful way, or at least something that's not related to the technology itself. You know, it's more about the content than it is about the tech. I keep ringing my bell about this. And so I'm glad someone's finally doing it. And it's also a personal connection because my name just can fit in that title. Azad. Azad. So I'm excited to see things that are coming out there. Well done. One Rick, I think, is the production studio. So we'll have all of these things linked in the show notes. That's it for the news for the past couple of weeks. And let's dive into our main topic, which is you guys from Servios. Hey, guys.
I thought we were going to do jazz hands. That's just me.
No. So what exactly are you doing? Tell our audience who have never heard of you before.
About Servios or about us?
I guess a brief introduction was Servios a game company before VR? And I guess a brief history of like what you've published at this point.
Seems all you.
Sure. So we both work at Servios, which coincidentally enough, actually did not start as a VR game studio. Mm. Yes, we started just exploring VR experiences, and our first game was Raw Data. It came It came out this year, but we started in early access and there was an overwhelming amount of support for the game. It was a sci-fi action combat game that really 100% utilized full body experiences and active VR. So our main philosophy here is VR doesn't have to be stationary. It doesn't have to be stagnant. It should be immersive and engaging and visceral. And we're working on our second game, which is Sprint Vector. Andrew is the lead designer and I'm the product marketing manager for it. It's slated to come out Q1 2018 and it follows that same philosophy. It is an intensely active VR game. It's essentially parkour free running in VR and it's highly, highly competitive. You have played it and you can vouch.
You had one of the most interesting reactions I've seen at GDC. I mean, like, you were...
How did he react?
He was flying around. He was jumping, leaping. He was
actually flying.
Like, yeah.
He
lifted off the floor and then blasted off.
But his feet were off the ground.
I mean, there's a button to jump, and I was like, I'm going to do that and jump to get that extra, maybe get an extra jump. I don't know if that's...
I mean, I just remember the impression, like, I was focused on a bunch of people, and then you came in out of the line, and it almost felt like you just flew into the VR headset and then just started going just immediately. And I was just like, whoa. I don't know. Like, it was you and Kent Bye. Kent Bye also had an interesting reaction where he was essentially just like dancing. He was dancing while he was running. Those are by far the two most memorable at GDC.
Kent is awesome at, Kent is awesome at like demos, because you put him in there and he just totally embraces it for whatever, you know, is being presented. And you see him dancing a lot in some of these experiences. And so that's awesome if he was dancing while sprinting.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
The reason why Sprint Vector really caught our eye is because it kind of goes against all the, let's call it, traditional like locomotion methods in VR, and kind of is, there's a few examples out there in terms of the apps that aren't using teleport and whatnot, but like this one is just like, I just call it like a massive FU to just like teleporting and moving. And it's just like, this isn't even room scale. It doesn't even have to be room scale. You stand in, you can kind of stand in one spot and be running in place, and you, by that motion, your body really does feel like it's moving through space. And so I can tell there's been a lot of work been put into this in terms of the different directions that you can move. You can, you know, not only, it's not just forward sprinting, but you also have climbing mechanics in there. You have Superman mechanics, jumping mechanics. I guess let's kind of start at the top. Let's talk a little bit about the
inspiration. You want some history?
Yeah, because it sounds like this might be... Did this come off as an idea from Raw Data, which already had this like sprint locomotion dashing technique?
So here's the weird thing. Like Amy mentioned, Servios did start as something else. It was actually a hardware company, and they were making their own hardware and everything. And it had a bunch of prototypes. Raw Data used to be a different prototype called Bullet Time Apex and kind of transformed into Raw Data. Sprint Vector also existed before what was now known as Raw Data. And when I got brought on, I was brought to work on Raw Data as a level designer, but I also got to play Sprint Vector, and I was like, holy crap. Let's be real clear here. The climbing was amazing. Blew my mind immediately. And I was quite jaded. So the fact that it blew my mind, awesome. The locomotion was touch to move forward and like tap to jump, and it was awful. Absolutely awful. And I remember just thinking like the potential of it. And I was waiting to work on it the entire time. We're going through Raw Data, and we got that to a good point. And we're like, okay, well, now we want to do Sprint Vector. And we were taking a look at it, and we're like, well, Sprint Vector, climbing's awesome. There's definitely a game there. The locomotion's making everybody sick. And we think there's something to this whole climbing aspect of like grabbing a knob and pulling yourself, grabbing another one, et cetera. And we even had like this idea that you could still fling yourself and go at incredibly high speeds. So we're like, okay, let's take this problem and fix it. And it's a problem that everyone's going through. It's the locomotion problem. So from the climbing, and on top of that, looking at Raw Data and be like, well, teleshift was essentially moving the player through space at like incredibly high speeds. And it was like 99% effective at making sure people don't get nauseous. So we're taking a couple of these ideas. We took a look at the community, different type of titles. Obviously, there are like gesture-based arm swinger stuff where if you just do this, you'll be driven linearly forward. And there's other stuff when you kind of like, again, grab a node and pull yourself, grab a node, pull yourself. And that was very similar to our climbing already. So we're like, well, that works. And it seems like this might just be a natural thing to do. So let's start blending it into this locomotion system where it's about pulling your hand and you get an impulse out of it and it pushes you forward. And let's play with momentum. And
so if we can describe for a second for, I guess, listeners that can't see our arms swinging by this.
Oh, of course.
you're kind of, if I guess conceptually, you might be able to call it as like grabbing the air in front of you, swinging your arm behind, like by your side and behind you, and letting go. And then that's just not just a one-to-one motion, but you're saying there's a little bit of a propulsion that like happens at the end of that swing. And so you continually do that. And how fast do you think you're going in terms of like in a linear?
I mean, I think base speed, we cap out somewhere like 45 miles per hour, just what the player can get to by themselves, which is close to a car. Then we have obviously a bunch of boosts and nitros that push you like beyond 60 to like 80. And then we have a power-up because we weren't done. That is called Overdrive, that when you activate it, it just kind of like multiplies your maximum movement speed and impulses even more. So I think at that point, you're going like 150 or beyond. Who knows how you mix that up with the boosts?
How many iterations did you require to make sure that people don't, you know, feel nauseous or uncomfortable?
So because we were coming from the climbing concept in the original Sprint Vector prototype, we already knew that wasn't making people nauseous. That was probably the biggest key to like, okay, if this works and it's essentially like this one-to-one I grab point and like my body moves relative to it, it was a really good starting base. So then when we did create the impulse type system that you like threw it backwards and you started going forward, it was just as simple as taking some of the most low tolerance people in our studio, running them through it, even without any tuning. And this was like really rough stuff. There was no like intended motion subsystems to make sure you're going forward straight or anything. But even then it was promising because some of the people who were having a hard time having this push forward movement were fine. Mm-hmm. They were having no problems whatsoever. So
Azad, you tried it actually out. Could you maybe answer my question? Is if you, when you do this locomotion, you kind of move a lot or fast in VR, but you also move in the real life with your body a little bit, right? There is kind of a coupling between your body moving a little bit, kind of,
I guess,
you moving in the game.
You stand in a stance kind of rather than like forward. You kind of stand in like, like you're about like to throw like a basketball. Lunge. Yeah, there we go.
I mean, it's very personal.
Don't necessarily move unless you're like an idiot like me and I'm jumping and realize like, I think I hit a couple things in the room a few times because I can be disorienting. But it's like, yeah, it's quite visceral.
It's definitely, we tell people to have a stance specifically for safety, right? You don't want people drifting off and breaking stuff. As long as you're kind of nicely planted, all the control you need is in your upper torso. So it's not really necessary to move yourself. I don't know. Some people say it helps them to like jog in place. We don't particularly want or not. We don't recommend it because we just don't want you to hurt, like break anything, careen off, that kind of stuff. It's already so intense. So,
yeah, I see.
It's worth noting if people are listening, I guess, that it is really as simple as running. Like it is not a, you know, it's step by step. I pull, I release, I pull. It really just ends up turning into a run.
And so some of the inspirations that I guess we can talk a little bit about here, and I'm sure we've mentioned them before. One comes to mind is I think Art of Fight had the swinging locomotion while it was a shooter. So it's kind of a trade off between like having a gun in one hand and like moving with the other. That one was interesting. I think I've played it a few times. Unfortunately, I don't think it has like an active user base. Was that like a factor into like the research that you guys have done?
Yeah, definitely. That was one of the titles that we looked at. At the time we were looking at it, we didn't like the, again, it was a lot like our climbing where it was kind of like grab point and like grab my screen, grab a point. And like go to another and had almost this chunky kind of feel. You could kind of like toss yourself, which was nice, but we really wanted something that was more fluid and dynamic and mixed into some of the other systems. Personally, more I did like play skates. A lot of Art of Fight. Yeah.
Okay.
The whole skating feel kind of evolved from, well, what's the most comfortable way to get fast is to keep this acceleration going and then put it within a skating context and iterate on that.
Have you played Lucid Trips?
Yes. So interesting.
That's probably one of the most original titles that kind of really wanted to change how locomotion worked. And yeah, Sarah Lisa Vogel from Berlin, actually from
VR Base, she created this very interesting locomotion concept where you're kind of playing a lucid game, like, you know, it's your lucid dream where you kind of move your hands in a circle way and you push yourself.
Well,
I'll show it. Yeah, you kind of push yourself from surfaces and you fly. So
and then you hold your arms out and you glide around and you have like boosters like in your hands. And then Lone Echo also integrated a similar mechanic. And
I think they actually have an update they published out today. So maybe we should also mention
Lucid Trip,
you know,
actually.
Going forward. Yes.
I did see that actually.
They have an update that came out today. So shout out to them.
Yeah, that these are small independent developers that are one or two people. And we always want to help support these people.
Definitely.
So back to Sprint Vector. I mean, every game that I've played that has like really fun movement and that involves your arms and like floating through an actual experience has, I think, been the most immersive type of VR experience that I've felt. How do things seem like from your end when you're developing this? Positive feedback from people? Like, I think the trailer speaks for itself with like the amount of happy people you have in there running and screaming and jumping. It's very much a party game, right? Or a competitive party game.
Sure. Well, Sprint Vector is, and this kind of goes back to the conversation we were just having about locomotion, but one of the unsolved mysteries of VR is how do you immerse people into the game with locomotion and how do you not break the connection? And so games like you mentioned already, Art of Fight and Lucid Trips, there are so many different developers and so many different members of the community that are, you know, they're taking a stab at it and they're giving their take. I think that's wonderful. And so with Sprint Vector, it really was the same notion. Like, this game, does it only exist because we were so stubborn? We were so stubborn, we needed to create our own locomotion to do the things we wanted to do, which was, you know, these extreme motions that you can't do in the real world. Because there's another thing about VR where, like, you should be able to do these superhuman movements. You should be able to drop off of cliffs and survive, you know? You land on your feet and you keep running. And I think, like you said, our trailers really show it. And the one thing, just based off of the studio, we do playtests and it gets really heated and really competitive and it's a huge spectacle. People love watching each other. So I think you nailed it on the head. It's 100% a party game. People love watching it and it's 100% competitive. In fact, we've already demoed, I keep breaking my screen. well, we've already demoed Sprint Vector at a number of events and we've brought it actually last weekend. We brought it to IAM Oakland, which is, you know, it's a huge esports event. And we've been running contests and people really get invested. We see people coming back and jumping into the line and replaying multiple times because there is already that sense of, I want to be number one at this game. I understand the game, but I'm not the best at it. And I need to get back in and I need to keep playing.
That's probably the thing that people have told us the most, actually, is that they understand that they themselves could be doing better. They don't feel held back by the locomotion system, that it is really just a matter of, if I put in more time, I could get better and I could experience more. And when I experience more, I feel even more free. So it makes me want to play the game more.
That's exactly how I felt when I first started playing Echo Arena, where like that locomotion made me feel that there's a lot of room for me to grow in. And it really motivated me to go back and want to get better. I think that was the first time that I actually wanted to get better at a VR game. And I think Sprint Vector is totally, like, when it comes out, like, will be another one of those titles. I'll be like,
well, running. From the description, how you played it, you're already really good at it.
So. Crazy video somewhere.
I'll try to find it
and publish it. Maybe you have video proof of how Azad was jumping.
I took the footage on my phone.
This would be awesome.
It was pretty intense. Yeah.
Now, do you have just, is this party mode, or do you have also some kind of online multiplayer?
So basically we have a quick match type thing so everybody can play with each other as quickly as possible. We have a private match so you could invite your own friends. In either case, everybody's taken to like the skate park environment so they can just kind of like skate around until people are ready or like the match fills and then we go off to a race. So there's online play. You can also play single player versus AI. And on top of that, because we know, you know, sometimes people don't want to play versus AI or they don't have people to play with, we actually have an entire set of challenge maps. And those challenge maps run across three modes. It's pretty simple. It's time trial, a collection mode. And then the third one, which is us just saying, you know what, screw it, is that ability I talked about before, which is overdrive, where it's like constantly pushing you to the max and then some. In that third mode, it's just always on. Like all the time. So you're just blasting through the level. And it's really to encourage this kind of, you know, the speedrunner feel, right? Like I would love to see a community of people evolving on YouTube, see people like just glitching the maps, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, there are definitely people who are totally crazy about that. Some people manage to play Half-Life 1 in 18 minutes or whatever. Exactly. So I'm pretty sure they will be totally in love with your game.
Yep.
Now, when we speak about this party effect, what kind of scenarios could you imagine? Like, there's one system there, one Vive or Oculus system, and people are basically watching another. person is playing, or maybe one wife tracking in two systems? Or could you imagine that everyone bring it to a LAN party, they create a big space? Like you mentioned, you don't need to move yourself around, so everyone's standing in a circle and doing it. Is this something that, you know, would be doable?
Oh my gosh, all of the above.
We kind of already experienced this in-house. We had a tournament like really early on, and we did have essentially two Vives in one play space just running side by side. There's such a spectacle to it. And it's just like, you only need that. That's all you need. You can have two people racing. If there was AI, that's fine too. But the competitive aspect between two people racing each other and like this reptilian thing that activates in the back of your head where someone kind of gets in front of you, like, no, I want to get in front of him. And then he's like, I want to get in front of him. And it just keeps pushing each person to their absolute limits until by the time they get to the finish line, they just drop down in like puddles of sweat. It's exciting. Like everybody loves that. The people who come out of that love that, loves that. They make an intense experience.
I want to add this as well to people that are worried about like putting in sweat for a game. I actually am a super lazy gamer. And if I'm going to play a VR game and if it requires actually like way too much room skill running around, I just won't play it. Like I'm going to run into things. I'm going to bump into things. I don't want to wear a headset and sweat inside of it. But like the way Sprint Vector, I think, does things and some of these good locomotion games, like you can definitely work yourself up, but it's not like by default, you're not going to be sweating. I think that's like a really good thing so that you can actually have longer play times. And if you want to push yourself, you can.
Yes.
But it's like a lazy gamer's form of like fast gaming.
Okay, is that another question for me? Is it more skill based or move based? Let's say if someone is super sporty and he comes in and doesn't have too much skill in your game, he just moves very fast. Would we have an advantage of someone who is, you know, maybe a little bit more lazy, but just played it 300 hours straight and is just way better at it?
I would actually say probably the guy who played it more, because the way that at least I approach tuning stuff is very much like a mechanical depth, right? I mean, look, there is a base thing that if two people come in and like one of them is doing like a really lazy and the other one just like destroying their controllers, that person is definitely going to get the advantage, right? but the way that we work it out is essentially you can build up this momentum and you can maintain it. So as long as you know when to kind of stride your arm, and as long as you keep up that speed and you're making like intelligent decisions on the course, mm-hmm. because there's different paths, you probably will have the advantage. And then we kind of rubber band things with power-ups as well to make sure that, okay, even if you are behind, you get some nitro, kind of these Mario Kart-esque mechanics, right?
So technically your game is even playable by handicapped people, right?
Technically.
So when someone is in a wheelchair, he could totally play it because he doesn't need to move.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm kind of fascinated about, what we've been talking the last 20 minutes about, is that your game has, and I'm pretty sure more games like this should come to VR, those fundamental features, like you don't need to move too much, but there is still motion. You can play it with people in one space, you can do it multiplayer, you can play it locally. It is even handicap-free, because we once did play, I think it was Hover Junkers in one Vive tracking space, and we had someone who is a little bit handicapped, so he can't really move too much, and he was doing well, but it was kind of hard because you need to move fast from A to B in real space. And a lot of features seem to be like just a good level of design from the game perspective to offer it to a lot of people, right?
Mm. Yeah, good accessibility design is really, really important. Yeah. And like there hasn't been enough integrated, because obviously, like, I don't know, there aren't that many users that you need to design, or they're not that vocal yet in terms of people being pissed off if you know if just you're starting playing in a wheelchair or not. But like I guess even by the way it's originally designed, like that comes for free, and that's an awesome thing that you can have.
We've kind of seen it at some conventions too, where I believe at E3 there was a guy in the line with crutches, and I was like, oh well, you know that this game, like you're going to be swinging your arms. He's like, no, I really want to play and I can balance myself. And honestly, when he got into the player two position, I was a little nervous. Like, oh God, if this guy gets hurt, like I'd feel terrible. But he killed it. I was completely like, I was so blown away. He killed it. He loved it. And I've seen other people, like I've seen little children, which technically we're not even really accounting for that size, and they play it and they love it. It's just because it's so much just about the motion controllers and doing the Stride, it is kind of available to everybody.
You know what? If Sega made a Sonic game, it would be this game. Like, seriously, just add some loop to loops and you know, Sonic.
This would be awesome. I actually really enjoyed the Sonic games. Let me speak about controllers. So right now you're kind of limited to the touch controllers and to the Vive controllers, right? Now, if you would have more capability of the controllers, imagine one day we have like a really good working leap motion or some hand controllers or, you know, force feedback. What would benefit your games most? Or where would you see like a huge benefit? Like eye tracking, maybe hand finger tracking, some force feedback stuff. Where would it really, you know, give you new abilities to extend the experience of the game?
Surprisingly, I would actually probably go with eye tracking. Mainly because, like, when you're playing the game, you get this incredible tunnel visioning effect. In fact, we put stuff in the environment where we're like, oh, this is going to look really cool and people enjoy this and all this stuff. But because we have all these effects going on, people just get so zoned in, they almost don't even remember the level. They just get to the end and they're like, oh, there was a statue? I guess there was a statue.
They're like, oh, I blacked out, but I got first place.
So having maybe eye tracking, we could at least position the effects a little bit differently and like provide different kind of cues or something. It's interesting. I mean, I would have to really think about other input methods, right? Like people have talked about pucks and putting those on your feet and like, what if you ran in place or like Azad wanted to like jump in real life. but honestly, it's like something that you'd have to take into account when you're designing everything from the get-go because all we had were hands, head. So the entire system is based on hands and head. One of the more important things as well is like because it is still tied to some button presses, it isn't kind of this gray area where like, well, if I did have to physically jump, how high do I have to jump? Is me crouching and coming back up a jump? Like there is no room for system error. It's all in the player's hands, literally. So it kind of helps them have faith in the system.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I think another game just came to mind that can fall in a similar category of movement. VR Unicorns that made the selfie tennis game that was kind of that launch title. They're working on a ski jump game and it involves basically like crouching down, holding the sticks by your side, and then like the jump, you have, you know, when you're going to jump from the ski, you have to like, it's the position of like where your head is relative to the ground to when you jump, you actually have to like totally jump. I mean, the whole game is based on that one jump. And you can get some error. And then after that, there's other things that happen. But I love this idea of actually using your body positioning as like as the factor for artificial movement. Like, I think we're getting mature. Finally, the design of VR apps are starting to get a little bit more mature. And even though you still need to like develop it yourself, there's not like an API you're pulling from that it like has like smooth locomotion.api that you can have, but like there is actually there's on the Unity App Store is like the Freedom Locomotion, I think, is like the super customizable thing. But I mean, you have enough developers that you can really fine tune what you want. Quick thing, actually, what hardware are you supporting for release?
Amy, you want this one?
Sure. We'll be releasing Sprint Vector for HTC Vive, Oculus Touch and Rift, and PSVR.
Awesome. Ooh. PSVR is going to be really nice. Lots of players on that one.
Yeah, and we're actually, PSX is next weekend, and we're bringing two setups there. So we'll actually get to see, you know, the PlayStation community get their hands on the game to demo it for the first time.
Nice.
From the business perspective, where do you expect the most revenue? Or rephrasing the question, where do you see the most users? Or which device, basically?
That's kind of a hard question. I think Sprint Vector is such a unique game, and it has such a unique play style. I'm not sure it's pretty clear that PC and console VR are two completely different audiences and demographics. So
really?
Seeing which one adopts this game is going to be interesting.
I guess, can you guys generalize?
Would you say that they're so different? Why are they so different?
The difference comes from like some of our research is that a lot more enthusiasts are PC side, right? They're not actually, like, they didn't come in as gamers. They came in as enthusiasts and they're like, okay, what's this developing tech? They started with DK1. They went to full release, Vive, etc., blah, blah. They're looking at all this stuff, and they aren't quite looking it from the lens of a gamer. And that's totally fine, right? Like, we make stuff for that, and we make sure to accommodate for that. But going with the PSVR side of things, because it's bred from a console, you're inherently getting an entire gamer audience. So it's actually very interesting. I'm literally on the same page. I don't know which one's going to do the best or have the most users. It could be that it's the PlayStation because of just sheer numbers, or it could be that because the fluid locomotion is just something to be experienced, to believe, or whatever marketing slang you want to throw up. It could be that something that PC-centric.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting insights.
I don't know if you guys, have you released raw data on the PSVR?
Yes. Raw data is available PC and PSVR now.
Awesome. So I'm sure you guys have learned a ton from that in terms of creating a multi-platform. Yes.
A lot.
Yeah, and we just did a VRDC talk about basically porting raw data from PC to PSVR. I think that talk is available online if you guys wanted to
we'll
check
that.
It out. But maybe one of the biggest takeaways was with raw data, we really hadn't planned on porting or bringing the game to PSVR. And I think with Sprint Vector, this is something that was very intentional. Right after raw data, we said from the beginning, this game, we're platform agnostic. We are going to push this game out to as many available platforms as possible.
How do you cope with the fact that the controllers are so different? So in multiplayer, when people have different controllers, do you account for it, or you just let them use their platform and see which one performs better?
So
there is no fundamental difference.
So obviously there is a button configuration difference, and that, you know, you design around that. Generally speaking, because it's all motion based, we luckily do have a trigger across all of them, and you could use basically the same setup. Now there is an interesting difference between like the tracking, obviously, and the data that you get. So we do compensate for how we interpret that data and transfer it into speed and momentum. So we're controlling that to create like an equalized experience across all the platforms, so everybody feels like they're playing the same game. It's particularly important for Oculus and Vive, right? Because we're going to be doing crossplay. You play either Oculus or Vive at the same time. So it's important that that's balanced. And on the PlayStation side of things, it was important to make sure it's balanced, just because there is a lot of very specific numbers that have been put into the tuning of the system to make it feel good. And I'm glad that people pick up on that, because that's usually the first thing I'll hear is like, oh, this feels really good. It's like, well, thank you. We put like hundreds and hundreds of hours just to make it feel good.
It's simple. Seems simple, but the truth is that there are, I mean, do you want to talk about intended motion? Like, we worked really hard to make it feel natural and to make it feel intuitive.
Sure. The idea of intended motion for us, and it extends on all the platforms and is tuned a little bit differently. For each one, is it's a collection of subsystems that helps the player move in our game or do actions in our game. So like, and this is going to be terrible for audio listeners, but like when your hands are like going straight versus when they're crisscrossing, zigzagging, if you were to go by like a traditional like art of fight, air grab kind of thing, you would be going left and right. You wouldn't be going straight. So we have to be checking like the direction of the hands.
Yeah, you're kind of like smoothing out vectors and keeping a linear motion.
We're trying to make everything focused in because we know the player wants to move forward. We're trying to add assist systems. Like if you're grabbing a climbing knob and throwing yourself up, we know you want to go up. So we're not making you slam into the wall or slam away from the wall. Red. Yeah, it's all about predicting this. I don't want to say raw data. This raw data.
Yeah.
into the game to make sure people get what they think they're going to get.
Do you use some kind of inverse kinematics, or how would you interpret the intention of the user?
A lot of it is just motion controller data driven. We have an amazing guy here, Adam Craver, who's all about the IK system. He's developed like an internal system for it, so he'd be better to talk about that. But a lot of it for just the fluid locomotion system is data. It's just like, okay, what force, what direction, how fast, and just through the development of it, it was essentially like, okay, well, this still doesn't feel right because there's this window that's missing, or this number needs to be extended or modulated across these values. And that's like, if you were to look at, if you were to look at what the fluid locomotion system is in terms of just raw numbers, it's like think I counted like 600 plus variables, and like a lot of those are
wow.
Yeah, just it's really intense.
Some nice data science
in
the raw data.
Absolutely. It sounds like you guys are spending a lot of time doing R&D and building all this like amazing tech to help you build these experiences. I'm sure you have desires and wants and wish lists of things that you'd want to have this apply to. What's like one thing that you'd love to work on apart from Sprint or after Sprint Vector that you can see, you know, integrating what you've learned into?
Mm-hmm.
You can go first, Jamie.
Oh, thanks.
Just for you.
Thank you. I would say with Sprint Vector, creating the fluid locomotion system is really opening up a lot of the motion capabilities for future games. Sprint Vector is 100. It's a motion game. It's all about running. But how do we incorporate
build? Like, no, I don't even talk about, you know, what you guys are working on now. Or you could share secrets. It's fine. Nobody, you know, nobody's going to listen to this anyway.
So we're working on all of these. No,
but I'm trying to get to. Yes, give me the list. but seriously, what's like exciting you? Like, what would you love to be building? On
so,
like, what do you want VR to be?
Without getting too marketing's going to kill me. We are working on.
Amy is like,
oh god,
eyes locked, hands forward. I am gonna kill you, Andrew.
Music based game, right? It's as much as I can say. We're really interested in just pushing every angle of VR. So like the idea of us going from raw data to Sprint Vector.
But his question was, what game do you want to make?
What do I want to make? I want to make everything. Like, I love the fact that Sprint Vector is like this intense locomotion thing. And at the same time, I want to take, like, personally, I would love to take Sprint Vector and put it into a very shootery context, maybe like Art of Fight, but even push that to some extreme. But, you know, it's about what we want to work on next as a company. It's core tech, right? Like, fluid locomotion is a core tech, and we want to make more core tech that we can reuse and kind of like pioneer, and that's really literally everything that Servios is about. So
nice. Well, that's you and Amy. I don't think you finished your answer. What you want?
I want to take the fluid locomotion system and invert it. So instead of using it to push yourself forward, you use it to push a ball forward, and you pick up a bunch of items with it.
Ooh. Oh,
I want to make Katamari in VR.
Katamari,
yeah. And you can totally do like
this game was so good.
Right? You can totally grab and pull. So instead of pulling your arms forward, you're basically pushing the ball like this. You're like backwards skating.
I like that. I would work on that.
You can be like a kitten in a ball of yarn, and you're just like, like scratching your hands forward, and this ball is going and picking up more yarn. And
I mean,
What do you guys want to see with this sort of mechanics? Not that easy.
I'm biased, and my interest is usually, you know, more industry based and science based. So we were trying actually on the weekend during the hackathon with the hackers to build some kind of locomotion to go up and down in VR effectively. So imagine you have some kind of huge space, some construction space that you're planning in VR, right? How would you, without scaling or teleporting, make sure that you can go up and down and kind of design things up and down? Because we always think, or as a company I work for, about the embodiment, and that we don't lose the scale, and the world kind of around us in VR looks the same as real, because we are, you know, you're using the software for planning in VR, and you kind of don't want to lose your position awareness through teleportation or actually the scale awareness. So how could you, you know, use the systems that you built for gaming maybe in a slightly less gamification way to just, you know, move through space but still be aware of it? Now, this would be kind of really awesome, but I don't know, it makes sense.
No, I think it makes sense. I mean, there's a bunch of different kinds of apps I played in VR that are about manipulating 3D models, right? You're basically talking about manipulating the model. It doesn't have to be the player moving. It could be the world around the player moving, and you can restrict things, put up grid. If there's nausea, you can restrict the field of view, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these little tips that are popping up now that we're in this age. Like, okay, we've done some stuff and it's proven. And I think definitely if you're talking about a more construction-esque thing, I think it would be amazing to have like preset views, top down, left, right, front, back, etc. Be able to go into wireframe, if possible, orthographic, even though you're inherently in perspective, right? Those kind of things are important.
That would be interesting. What would an orthographic view seem look like in VR, where like there's no bending of lines, it's all just like flat?
That would literally just be a card in front of us, right? And it's just lines perfectly on top of each other on a grid. I don't know. It's a little weird. It's a little mind-bending to think about it.
Yeah, that would be a fun
and a hard to imagine
trip. what I would see... Okay, I just came up with this. I can't come up with two ideas that I'd love to see. One is a... I want a VR version... Or you are a robotic tiger playing Rocket League, where you're just like lurching forward and like, and then bouncing off the ground and like hitting the ball, and or trying, you know, you got to get it's this competitive
back there you
and
go.
Forth play. But yeah, you have to be in like a stance position as a tiger, and you're just like, just want to be like, oh, gorillas. Maybe it's just gorillas. I like the because you don't have to be on all fours. You can be on like two, and then you're just like. You know, the gorilla's got that awesome motion with the fists on the ground.
It could be a bunch of carnivores, and instead of a ball, it's like a bunny rabbit.
Oh my god!
There you go. That's the PSVR version. and the second one is I want to have like a space, kind of like Glone Echo or whatnot, but have actually gravity and different planets being a thing. So like floating around planets and like getting sucked into a certain. You know, field and then slingshotting off and being able to propel yourself. And I don't know, like I want to feel gravity pulling me in. And I think VR can be a really good, like it's already helped me understand scale of space so much with just being in a, you know, relative size. But like, I think it could also be a really good tool to understand gravity and mass kind of intuitively like that. So make it happen, guys. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm taking notes.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for enduring another episode of the Research VR podcast. Why don't you guys tell? Actually, yeah, let's start with you, Amy. How can people reach you if they want to contact you personally?
Oh, me personally, you can just find me on Twitter at Miss Habits. Very easy. Or you can check out any of the Servios social channels. I always have my eyes on those. And so that's
right.
Twitter/Servios, Instagram Servios, and then Facebook is Servios VR.
Awesome. And then you also have a Twitch channel.
Sure. We also do dev streams and community nights on our Servios Twitch stream. It's just twitch.tv/Servios.
Nice. Well, you also have your own personal
Twitch
account as well, but if you don't want to talk about it, it's fine. Miss Habit is kind of a big deal in this room.
No. you should come visit and be on one of our streams again.
Yeah, that would be really fun. Andrew, how can people reach you?
You cannot reach me.
Just don't.
Realistically,
he's imprisoned until I'm pretty imprisoned.
I'm not super huge
coming in.
Not super huge on the social media platforms personally. I do have a Facebook, but I barely am on it. Honestly, if you guys are posting on like the Vive Reddit, Oculus Reddit, PSVR Reddit, and it has anything to do with Servio, Sprint Vector, or Raw Data, more than likely I've already read your comment.
Nice.
So
wow.
Yep.
That's good support right there. You can find me at Azad UX on Twitter and Oz Balabanian on Facebook. Starting a YouTube channel soon, actually. I'm going to start doing... I've talked a lot about photogrammetry and 3D scanning. I'm actually forcing myself to now start doing a scan every single day. And so going out into the world, finding something beautiful, capturing it, either just displaying it as it is and like recreating it as this like beautiful piece of art, or just really distorting it and like adding other elements. Oh yeah,
you've been posting some really impressive stuff where you basically
wherever my mind
your world and edit stuff.
you can find my work there. I actually just bought the domain everydayascan.com, so we'll see what I do with that. Hopefully that's just linking to my site now. But and Peter, where can people find you?
Twitter, you can find me at Mr. Raziello or search for Peter Lekov without the second E. Yes, I'm very cryptic. On Facebook as well, you can also like Research VR on Facebook or follow it on Twitter. You can email us.
Research VR Cast. on Twitter. Yes, email us at researchvrcast@gmail.com. Our guests are now pushing screens to each other, and it's turned into chaos. So I think we're going to be ending it here. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Amy and Andrew,
thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Peter, for joining us from Germany.
Thank you, Azad.
This was awesome, guys. Later.